Welcome to the Creative Entrepreneur Podcast, where mindset and marketing meet purpose, passion, and profits. I'm Bob Baker, and if you're a creative entrepreneur or someone who runs a heart-centered business, you're in the right place. To get a free collection of sample chapters from my books and audiobooks, just pay a quick visit to promoteyourcreativity.com. That's promoteyourcreativity.com. Now, enjoy the episode. This is part one of a two-part interview on building a career in radio. You might call it Confessions of a Radio Veteran. Ooh. So grab your favorite beverage, pull up a chair, and let's do this. This is the Creative Entrepreneur Podcast. Welcome to the podcast. On this episode, we're going to be talking about commercial radio from the mouth of a veteran. Maybe we'll get some inside scoop on what commercial radio is like these days, and maybe some advice, maybe how to get exposure on radio of all kinds. But I'm really excited today because my guest is Lauren Elwell, who on air goes by Learn. And so, hi, Lauren. I'm so excited to do this with you.
I know. It's so good to see you again, Bob.
I know, because we've known each other for a little bit. We'll talk about how we met last year. But here's an opening question that I like to ask many of my guests. So if you're at a party, okay, and you meet somebody for the first time and they have no clue who you are or what you do, and they ask that common question, they say, Lauren, so what do you do for a living? Tell me about yourself. How do you answer that question?
It depends on the situation, because sometimes I want to talk about what I do and then other times I don't want to talk about it.
I can see. Yeah.
Like, I just joined a new gym and they asked me, what do you do? You know, and I had a moment of reservation, and then I said, oh, well, I'm an on-air personality at Keishi. And so whenever I do answer truthfully, you know, people – and I've noticed this as time goes on. People are, depending on their age, are either really excited to know more about it,
yeah,
or they just don't care and it's, like, normal. And I actually prefer when it's – they don't care and it's like normal and they're not all about it.
Right, yeah. Right. So I like that on-air personality at Keishi. So for those, so I just want to clarify that I realize a lot of listeners to this podcast will not live in St. Louis,
okay,
which is where it's my hometown, it's where we are, it's where you live, and where Keishi is. So Keishi, let's kind of put this in perspective. Keishi has a pretty impressive stature, especially in the, well, it's referred to as classic rock, album-oriented rock, and it was really a pioneer. But I'm sure you know a lot more about this, even though I listened back in the early days. But where does Keishi sit in the history of, like, radio in this country?
Right. So it began in 1967, mm-hmm, and it has not changed formats since then. And so that would place it at being, 53 years old. And that makes it the longest running rock station in the world, we are pretty sure.
Yeah, because I'm not aware of any other. So it does really hold that stature.
It does.
There's no other station that started before or this. So, for any station to maintain the same format for even a couple of years is an impressive feat,
yeah,
right?
It is.
And even though it's changed owners and everything, and it's, mm-hmm, still – so there's something about it. And I'm going to date myself here, but I attended high school in the 70s, and I was hardcore. Many of my friends listened to Keishi all the time. And so you have to – and put this in perspective, classic rock, they were playing the cutting edge,
yeah,
you know, progressive, you know, rock music, new music of the day back then. And now, obviously, it's referred to as classic rock, because I'm not sure how much new. I mean, I guess, yeah, Keishi puts is a little bit of new music,
sometimes,
but it's usually from established artists,
right?
Right. So it's tapping into that, those memories of people that grew up with that music, right?
Yeah.
So Keishi is near and dear to my heart. So you, for like 8 years, right? You co-hosted the morning show with a guy named John Hewlett.
Yes.
Who, if you're in St. Louis, he's an icon.
Yeah, he's the public service announcer for, or the public address announcer announcer for your St. Louis Cardinals, and he's been at Casey almost his entire career. He did, I believe, 1 or 2 years maybe at a station, or not even a year probably, out in near Springfield, Missouri, I believe, really small station. And then, yeah, he's been with Casey for almost 50 years.
Oh, yeah, so most of that run.
Yeah.
I remember him early on, yeah. And so he's an icon, and you did the morning show there, which is 6 a.m. The morning show is 6 to 10, but you stayed on till 1
Till 1 o'clock, yeah, that's very good, yeah.
And you did that for 8 years?
For 8 years.
So I've been on some morning radio shows off and on over the years, and I just know that your shift starts at 6, right? Mm-hmm. So you pretty much have to, like, you're setting your alarm for, like, 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning, and you did that for almost a decade. Well, and then you recently shifted, mm-hmm. just like weeks ago, I believe, till the afternoon drive,
right,
which is 2 to 6 p.m. So I was curious, what was your life like having to get up at 4 a.m.?
It was very scheduled. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people would talk about, like, oh, do you ever get used to it? And I did get used to it, mm-hmm. but I was always very cognizant of what time it was.
Yeah.
For 8 years solid. And it didn't, like, on the weekends, I was always, like, on Friday nights, I would be very tired. And then, like, Saturdays, I would try to stay out late. And I wasn't a night owl anymore. And I was a forced morning bird. And, you know, so my life was good, but it was just always very cognizant of what time it was.
Especially on weeknights, right?
Yes.
Getting to bed early enough.
Absolutely.
Were you a night owl or an early riser prior to that, or did you had to adjust?
I had to adjust.
Okay. So it did not come naturally.
I'm a night owl. Like, I love being up late, and that's where some of my best ideas come from. And so having to shift to the morning life was very strange, but I did get used to it. And then, you know, whenever the opportunity came up for afternoon drive, I would always kind of daydream about the people I knew that had afternoon drive time slots. And I would think, gosh, they get off early, like at 6, and they're able to go to dinner or a show, and then they don't have to, they could party, or they could, you know, have a whole nother time. They could have another job,
right,
in the evening, you know, like, so I always kind of reveled in wondering what that lifestyle is like. And now I'm living it for the last month. I've had that time slot.
Yeah, just a month. It's still new.
It's still.
So how's that shift been for you?
I'm still getting up. I set my alarm for 6:30, and I get up when my husband gets up, and then he goes to work earlier than I, and then I have the morning that I need to get things done, because now I don't have the afternoon to get them done like I normally did.
Wow.
And so now I have to get everything done in the morning, and then I come into work at like noon, and then I prep for my show, which starts at 2, and then I get off at 6, and then I go do fun things like this, and I have the whole night to do whatever.
That's a completely different. And so, you know, I mentioned that you continued when you were doing the mornings, it was 6 to 1, so that's a 7-hour shift.
Yeah.
And now you have a 4-hour shift. So not only that, you've got less. Yeah, it seems like it would almost seem to be like a relief in many ways.
And I have to be working all the time. And so that's been something to get used to as well, is not having an abundance of thing, like so much time. Like, everybody would say, oh my gosh, you do 7 hours. That's insane. Now it's people giving me a hard time about, oh, now you're doing 4 hours, you know, and you're lazy. You can sleep in. And that doesn't sit well with me. So
you overcompensate by having to take on other things.
I have to, I'm like, maybe I could do something else. So, you know, but I do, I like to fill up my days and be as efficient as possible with my time. Mm-hmm. And so this is all just a transition period, and but I really am enjoying it.
Well, good. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about you and your background, and I got a ton of questions that I want to ask you on different aspects of this. But I was born and raised in St. Louis and grew up on Casey, but are you originally from St. Louis?
I'm not.
You're not?
I was born in Carbondale, Illinois.
Okay, not too far away.
Yeah. And I grew up in a little town called West Frankfort, Illinois. And then my mom remarried, and we moved to St. Louis about 21 years ago. And so we lived downtown, and then we built a house in the Illinois suburbs, and that's where I went to school. But I always, I just loved St. Louis, and I was never like a rural town human. I've always wanted to be around a city.
Living in the big city.
Yeah, the big city. And so I really do love St. Louis, and I mean, I can't even remember my life necessarily as a kid being in a small town.
Mm-hmm. You know? Now, did you grow up with music, or having a love for music, or did you play music, or what role did music and maybe the radio or whatever play in your life?
Well, there was always music, always. Mm-hmm. And my mom and dad, they were divorced, but they each had great music taste. My dad was like very much Creedence Clearwater Revival and Fleetwood Mac. And my mom has been the Rolling Stones and Aerosmith. And I found hip hop in my own way with my friends and everything. So I've had a great, I've had a wonderful life full of all sorts of different music that I love. And from my generation to coming into the 90s and the grunge scene and like music was always a part of me. I don't label myself as a music aficionado. It's impossible. There's so much out there, but I definitely have, I love rock music the most. And being able to work at Keishi, I never thought that that would even happen because I always thought, oh, well, you have to be like a certain age to work there. But I swear I have an old soul and they accepted me. So,
speaking of that, I only heard you make a brief reference to this because, let's establish that you and I met at actually last year. So one of the things that I do in the arts is I teach and perform improv comedy. And I have my own weekly drop-in class every Thursday night. So if you're in St. Louis or you're passing through any Thursday night that you're here, with rare exception, you can come to my improv class. Go to improvstl.com to learn more about that. But I also do these 4-week classes through the community college, like three, one each semester. And I did one last June that you signed up for, and that's how we met.
Yeah.
And so that's how I got to know you. And you were really great. I just told you before we went on the air that you were very enthusiastic and embraced it. And I would love
Thanks.
To see you do more of it, and because you have to improvise. Well, we all are improvisers in our lives, but. Because even though, and we'll talk about maybe the structure of commercial radio and how it's changed and all that. But you were doing, like, the things that you did in the morning show with John were not pre-recorded.
Right.
I mean, you would go live,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we were organic.
Yeah, and you had to riff off of each other, so that's...
And people loved and still do love that.
Yeah.
Like, he and I have a great relationship and friendship, and I just love him so much. And so we were able to... Once we found that flow, which it didn't take very long when we started the show in 2012, the first time I made John laugh and I realized where his humor lied, I knew where I could come to, because he and I have 26 years age difference. Like and he's a sports guy. I don't care about sports. We had nothing in common besides ourselves and our personalities, and they really did mesh well. And so when I made him laugh and when I would give him zingers or I would give him a hard time, our audience loved that. Like, that was the one thing we got complimented on the most, is when I would give him a hard time or, because they knew it was not in a malicious way. It was like in a loving way, also taking this icon in St. Louis and kind of poking the bear and making sure he, his head didn't get too big. So, and your class helped me so much because I feel like I really, I'd never done anything like improv before. I had done like plays in high school and I'd always been, I love improv and shows and I love SNL, and even though that's bits, but I've always thought that people that are able to just think on their feet like that is so amazing. And I wanted to test myself and challenge myself. And that's why I signed up. And I want to say that you having that experience and opening up in that way led me. I actually started a band. I got asked to join a band last September.
I noted that on Facebook. And
my husband, who's supportive in all ways, he was like, okay, you're in improv class. And I was like, and now I'm auditioning for this band. And he's like, who are you? But I've always wanted to do these things. And I'm having such a great time. And I really do thank your class. And you were such a great instructor to push us, not in any sort of bad way, but push ourselves to be in that space that could be uncomfortable, but allow it to just happen and to absorb the energy of the room and just guide with your own brain. It was really liberating.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I saw that I'm very flattered. Thank you for the kind words. And I had no idea that the improv class actually kind of maybe led to or inspired you to start the band. And we're going to talk about that, too, because if you sing any songs from the 80s.
I do.
I've been doing acoustic 80s set. It's called Acoustic 80s with Bob Baker and Friends. Mm. And I have friends come up and sit in on songs. So.
All right.
We need to talk. Maybe it's another way to collaborate there. One more thing, and then we're going to take a little break here. But so I remember you made a reference once to how you didn't go when you got involved, I believe, with Keishi. You said you didn't actually get into on air. You were like, were you working in marketing? Or tell me this briefly, how you got involved in radio and then how that led to an on air position. Yeah, because I think that's an interesting story, too.
So I went to Illinois State, and I got my degree in mass comm with a concentration of radio and writing in English. And so I took that, and I came back home, lived in my mom's basement for a few months, and finally got, I was actually John, we knew a mutual friend, and I sent him an email and said, look, I'd really love to have an opportunity. I'm a barista right now, but I'm a hard worker. And I got my foot in the door and interned. It was not paid or anything or no credits for the radio station. And then in 2008, the economic crash happened, and I was able, when all these people unfortunately got fired, they needed people to facilitate what was going on, and I was just like, I can do anything. And I just was already in the promotions department with this internship.
Wow.
And they gave me a part-time job, so that got my foot in the door. And then from there, I just absorbed everything that was going on and talked to people and understood the boundaries of everything, like, you know, who does this job? Okay, great. Okay, what can I help with? You know, like that sort of thing. And I really just charged my way through the corporate ladder, and from part-time to full-time with benefits to, you know, always telling my program director I really want an on-air position, to getting a Sunday show that was very short-lived, to, hey, we're going to throw you on mornings with John, because I actually had another opportunity in Little Rock, Arkansas that I had applied for, and they wanted me. And I said, look, I'm getting ready to leave, but I really want to stay. Is there anything? And there fortunately was, you know, my boss at the time, Rick Bayless, said, yeah, we stay because something is going to happen. And then that was 2012. And then from there, we just killed it in ratings and, like,
we've
been there ever since.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
That's amazing. So I didn't know that whole story. So that's almost, that's like the classic story you hear about somebody starting in the mailroom and working their way up to, well, the CEO. But that's a pretty impressive thing about your determination. But was there something about you that led you to reach out to Keishi specifically? Like said, you listened to it, I guess?
I knew that Keishi and 105.7 The Point were brother stations. And so I thought, because of my age, I thought I would have a better shot at getting on The Point than I would Keishi, because I really did feel like I'm not good enough for that. and then really the station picked me, and it was mainly because of John connecting me with the marketing department and just networking into the building. You know, they saw how, and I had a blast. I loved the personnel I was working with, and really that the idea of working for The Point just kind of started shedding off of me, where I thought, oh, they already have their people, and this station is giving me all these opportunities, and I love this music anyway, and I love all the people I work with. And so it was really just kind of like they absorbed me, and I loved it.
Absolutely. That ties in. It's just like I'm going to be doing a blog or a podcast, a separate podcast, a solo one, talking about this very topic, about an approach that I am realizing that I've taken more throughout my life. And that's basically trying things, or you identify something, I think that would be fun to do. So you pursue it. You just take one step in that direction, and then you pay attention to the energy, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, like, improv became a huge part of my life because I just had I had a class with a group of friends. I didn't publicly announce it. I didn't start a business or anything, but there was a lot of energy. And when I would meet people at parties, even though I would tell them, oh, I do a lot of cool things, I'm a musician, I'm an author, and like, oh, I also teach improv, and their eyes would light up. So, like, it got energy and attention, and people started showing up to my classes, and I go, oh, so it's like you go where the energy is taking you and where people are responding, right?
Well, it's yes and. It's physically yes and, by saying yes and then and seeing where it is going to take you.
And yes and is an improv principle, for those of you who don't know. It's the rock bottom. Improv is based on agreement, but we'll have to save that for another show. So I'm going to take a break here, and then when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Lauren Elwell, who goes by Learn on the air. And I assume that's like a shortened version of, you know, Lauren, maybe from a rural, I don't know, hey, Learn.
Well, my grandma would call me Lauren, but actually a friend in high school gave me the nickname Learn.
So even before you were on the air, and then it kind of stuck. And it's L-E-R-N. That's how you spell that? Is that? But we're going to talk about, you got a podcast, maybe in little bit more about the band. Oh, I'm really excited to ask you about your brushes with greatness. Who are some of the rock stars that you've met that are the coolest? I don't know if you want to talk about who were not the coolest, but maybe we'll talk about that when we return after this very brief break.
I just wanted to take a few seconds to say, if you're listening to this podcast on Apple or Spotify or one of the other podcasting platforms, please consider subscribing. It's real easy to do. There should be a subscribe or a follow button somewhere on the page here, and that way you won't miss any upcoming interviews. I also do a lot of solo episodes where I'm dishing out marketing and career advice for creative people of all kinds. That includes musicians as well as writers and artists and actors and on and on. So if you haven't done that already, go ahead and do so now before you get distracted. Also, over the decades, I have written and published many books for creative people, including The Guerrilla Music Marketing Handbook, The Empowered Artist, The Passion Principles, The 9 Irrefutable Laws of Music Marketing, The DIY Career Manifesto, and many, many more. All of my titles are available on Amazon and at least a dozen countries around the world. And 6 of those titles are available as audiobooks on Audible, Amazon, etc. So if any of that speaks to you, go seek them out on Amazon and Audible, and I'll also include links to them in the show notes of this episode. Thanks, and now back to the interview.
All right, we're back in the studio here with Lauren Elwell, a.k.a. Learn, from KSHE95. One thing I didn't mention earlier, so I've been podcasting for many years. Actually, I first started podcasting in 2005.
Wow.
A long time. I've been very inconsistent, though, in my frequency.
Sure.
So there'll be, you know.
You and Mark Maron started this whole thing.
That's right. Yes, I was a trailblazer. And so I've done most of the interviews that I have done have been via Skype, you know, if I'm not the same room or the same city or country even sometimes. And then the only in-person interviews I've ever done, I mentioned to you earlier, was on my phone. I'll be at a conference or something. I'm just passing the phone back and forth in the little voice memo app. So this is the first time, though. There's this in St. Louis. We're in the new Shock City podcast studios at a place called Medici Media Space, which is kind of like a co-working space that I'm a member of in St. Louis. And it just opened like a month ago.
It's beautiful.
You're the first interview that I've had in this professional surrounding, so I can't wait to hear what it sounds like. We have to get a selfie also or a photo together before we leave.
Definitely, with the Shock City behind us. It's such a cool logo.
Yeah, it's really a neat space. So if this goes well, I may do more of these in-person interviews. I'm really loving this. So what I want to talk now, because I've seen you make reference, I think, to this on Facebook, and the one thing about working at a station as established as KSHE is that you probably have a chance to meet some of the people that come through town when they're touring and doing promos, and they don't probably necessarily come on the morning show, but I'm guessing you go to events or meet and greets or backstage.
Oh, yeah.
Have you done a lot of introductions at concerts where you get out there in front of thousands of people?
Stage intros, yeah.
Well, that would be fun.
Yeah.
And so tell me, who are some of the favorite, like who are some of the really goosebump moments that you've had? Who are some of the coolest people that you've met?
I always like to tell the story about how I met Jimmy Fallon. I meet a lot of musicians, and that's in itself amazing, but there's nothing like meeting somebody out of the TV. I just think it's so cool. So Jimmy Fallon, right before he landed the Tonight Show, he had Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. And when he announced that he was going to the Tonight Show to take that over, he did this kind of temporary run of comedy shows with these up-and-coming comics, and he had booked a show for Peabody Opera House. And so I got tickets to that show, and I have loved Jimmy Fallon forever. And so a good friend of mine who works at once Peabody, now Stiefel Theater, knew that I loved him so, and I would always talk and gush about how great he was. And I could never watch his show live because I had to get up so early.
That's right.
You know, so him coming to St. Louis was a really big deal. And so my buddy over at Stiefel said, hey, he called me the day that it was that Tim and I, my husband, were going to the show. He goes, hey, you have 1 hour. Can you get down here? Do you want to meet Jimmy Fallon? And I, like, almost died. I was so excited. And so I told my husband, like, get home, we have to go. And we lived in Maplewood at the time. And so we drove down there and we ended up crashing former blues player David Backus. He was having a meet and greet with his wife, with Jimmy Fallon. And then it was just my husband and I.
Oh, you're kidding. No. Oh, my God.
And it was so cool. And I brought him, we have this coffee table book about the, it was the 40 years of Kesey. That this guy who's local, John Neiman, made this coffee table book with all the memories and interviews mm-hmm. with DJs from the station. And I got a copy of that book and I signed, congrats on the Tonight Show. I love you so much, you know, way to go, love, learn. And I, when I met him, I gave it to him and I said, look, you know, you're a music fan. This is the oldest rock station in the world. You know, and he was exactly how I wanted him to be as a person. He was just so involved in meeting us, and he flipped through the book, and he, you know, really took his time, and it was one of those moments where I fangirled out big time.
Totally. Yeah, he's an amazingly talented guy. I mean, I watched him on Saturday Night Live. I'm sure he has an improv background,
yeah.
too.
Like
all those SNL people do. But I'm amazed at how talented he is in so many areas. He's a great singer.
Like yes.
And he plays the guitar.
Right.
So he's got to be a music – yeah, obviously a music fan,
He's
too.
A big music fan. And, I he has The Roots as his house band on The Tonight Show. And I just love that whole show. I just think from whenever it was late night to what it is now, he's a great person too, which is at the heart. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I hope that he's as sweet and I hope he's exactly what I hope he is, you know. And whenever I met him, and he was, I mean, it was like meeting Mickey Mouse. It was crazy.
Mickey Mouse. That's so funny that Jimmy Fallon would be above any of the other rock stars. But since it is a music, Kesey and classic rock. Yeah. Can you drop a couple other names too that were fun?
So I, you know, friend of the show, Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon.
Oh, yeah,
we love Kevin Cronin. I've met James Young from Styx and Tommy Shaw, who I love. He and I both wore Cut Off Shorts together at a show. Let's see. I've met Alice Cooper and Rob Zombie. I've met Slash from Guns N' Roses.
That's so awesome.
Dave Mason, I've sat with him. I've met Shep Gordon, Alice Cooper's legendary manager, who's awesome.
So that concludes part one of the interview. Stay tuned for part two, where I ask Lauren about the realities of commercial radio today. She shares some clever ways to sneak your music and other content onto radio stations. We also talk about ways you can effectively use your voice to make an impact, to attract an audience, and maybe to even make money with it. All of that is in store with part two, so keep an eye out for it. Thanks so much for listening. This is Bob Baker saying so long for now.